power hour. We will do 1 or 2 hours, just depends on the volume of questions we have. If you want to jump in right now, there's space. Press 1 on your phone and we'll be able to get to you. We're going to get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. And today is the power hour. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance. Engines, performance, fuel mileage, modifications, upgrades, emissions, troubleshooting, you name it, we'll talk about it. All you have to do is jump in and ask the question. We're going to get to those questions in just a little bit. I've got the guys here from Pittsburgh Power helping out. We've got Bruce and John and Ethan. Bruce, welcome.
Well, thank you, Kevin. As always, it's our pleasure to do the show with you.
And let's bring John and Ethan on. Hey, guys.
Thanks, Kevin. Great to be here. Hey, I've got to apologize. I'm not in very good voice today. I'm fighting a cold.
Yeah, same here, but it's great to be here, Kevin.
Oh, well, we're going to make you two do all the talking then.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I wound up with a cold and a sinus infection at the same time. Doing good.
I was down in St. Pete this weekend, which should have been good, but the airplane rides and the pollen blowing around all weekend seem to have affected my sinuses, and now it wants to stick around. So, yeah.
Overdose on vitamin C.
Oh, yeah, I've already gone about, I'm about 10,000 milligrams in already today.
Okay. There you go. Well, before we get to what you guys have this week, I had a call last night. I'm wondering if you guys have any ideas about it. It was a 2012 MX-13. It's got about 700,000 miles on it. He's been fighting a fuel issue, and he's to the point, it's been towed back in so many times and he just can't trust it anymore. He actually parked it and he's driving somebody else's truck for now. What was happening, it just won't hold a prime on the fuel. He'll be going down the road and lose the fuel prime momentarily, but then the engine derates and he gets it towed in and they can't get it started without a bunch of ether. So far they've replace the injector seals, the hand pump, and the fuel pump. Before they did that, they said you could pump on the hand pump all day long and never get any prime or pressure. And after they replaced everything, then it would pump right up. But it still does the problem going down the road. And it's had a delete on it, so he can't take it to a factory shop anywhere. So this has all been an independent doing this.
Interesting.
Any ideas?
I looked at one of the unit pumps. That thing utilizes unit pumps, kind of like an old Deutz. It's got 6 different unit pumps on it that run on the cam, and they're known to fail at the cam. So it could actually be a mechanical failure, one of those, which will affect the, eventually affect the seal inside. Has he done oil analysis? Does he find any fuel in his oil? Do you know?
He hasn't done any oil analysis yet. No, I recommended he just replace all the fuel lines as well, because that hasn't been done.
Yeah, the lines to the engine, obviously, that's just good maintenance there, especially with the mileage that's on that truck. That should have been done by now, I think. If not, definitely ought to look at those. Might be able to single out which unit pump it is, because those things are, of the failures I've seen on that earlier MX-13, they seem to be in that neighborhood. Be it the followers themselves, the pump itself, or the camshaft even. But, this isn't symptomatic of a camshaft, but it could be symptomatic of a failed unit pump.
Ah, that's a good idea. Maybe he's listening, because I think he's kind of given up.
We could have a toad here. We'll figure it out.
There also may be
that's
some
what I said.
Yeah.
check valves in there for like pressure check. If one of them has a small crack in it, it can cause the problem. That's a, I've never seen it on a Cummins, but I know that Cummins is always about inspecting them every time they're out.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds like good advice. What's new and exciting with you guys at Pittsburgh Power this week?
Kevin, have you looked at the 250 gear ratio spec and compared it with the with speeds and RPMs? Or 250 or 254?
Yeah, you know, when we've been promoting 260 for us forever because that was the common gear ratio that worked in direct. 250 isn't that far off. I mean, it's really hard to tell the difference.
Well, my question is, like in Wyoming, and where it's an 80-mile-an-hour speed limit, and everybody's going 75 and 80, I'm trying to get it so some of the guys that don't want to run 58 to 64 and still want to run in direct, I'm trying to get some figures on the 254 gear ratio. That chart on your computer that would tell us the speed that at 14 and 1500 RPM in direct gear with a 254 or 253. I forget exactly what the number is.
Yeah, they've even got some higher ratios now, down in the low twos. I forget the exact numbers and who's offering what, but I've seen some. John, I know you follow this as well. There's some numbers down in the low twos now, right?
I saw I'll probably text you a picture here before too long when I find it. There's a 195 now.
Wow.
Ratio. So with the downspeeding of engines is what's bringing this on more so than anything. I mean, these new engines that make peak torque at like 950 RPM. So it's the engine management systems have finally gotten to a place where they can manage the fuel well enough to run the engines that slow. And the engines have gotten stronger, obviously, in the bottom end to be able to handle it. So that's what's going on with that stuff. But I think that truck that Henry Albert's running right now, I believe that's got a, I believe it's a 219 or a 216 in it.
Yeah, okay. So, Bruce,
Bruce, I've got a calculator on my computer that I found. Dana's got a great one on their website. You need to know tire size and a couple other things, but it's really terrific.
Right.
Yeah.
But on a low throw 22.5.
Okay.
On a low pro 22.5 with like a 250 gear ratio, would that put us like 68 to 70 mile an hour in direct at 1500? That's what I'm searching for.
Okay. So,
got a lot of people that want to run in at 68 to 70.
All right, so 15, if we put in a 250 and a low profile and we're running indirect, then we end up at 65 miles an hour, we're at 1463.
1463 at 65.
At 65.
Yes.
I mean, if you jump up to 75. Yeah, I mean, that is.
No,
you jump up
to
75, you're at, okay, at 70 at 1575. If you wanted to keep it at 1500 at 70, you would need something around a 230 ratio. But here's the other option, too. I mean, you know, ideally, because you're not going to run that kind of speed everywhere. You're only going to run that kind of speed out west. So I think, you know, if I had my option to build this the way I wanted, I'd have a single overdrive with the 250s, and I can still run, you know, 60, 64 in direct and get really good fuel economy and just use that one overdrive when I'm out west.
Well, the problem is the single overdrive transmissions, I don't think, are rated for the higher torque. Those were from 1990 and older, 90, 92 and older. So you still have to stay with the double over 13 or 18 to have the higher torque transmission. But hey, even on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, they're not going 65 miles an hour anymore.
Well, if you, you know, I'd have to go look. I wonder if anybody's making a single overdrive. Now, there's so many new transmissions on the market, it's hard to keep up with all the options. But if you go, if you had a single overdrive and you went to that gear, which is usually around 0.83, at 70 miles an hour with 250s, now you're right at 1,300.
Yeah, we don't want to get that low. We don't want to be 1,300 at 70 miles an hour. We're using too much fuel to make too much boost to buck the wind and not having our rotating mass. And I'm talking about the trucks that are like 2007 and older.
You need to run yeah, the- okay. Let me get to a break. And we'll come back. We'll talk about that and more right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Bruce and Ethan and John are here with me. We were talking about some gear ratios and some other things. Have you guys got anything else, or should we get to some phone calls?
Oh, wait. I just had something come up. I had a listener text me who had a problem with a PACCAR in the past himself. Said there's a check valve in the back of the head that would cause this prime problem. So if that fellow's still listening, he's got an intro from a listener. That was it. And I had one more thing to chat about. Well, my trip to St. Pete this week. You know, I've got old friends in this business that I haven't seen in a while. And a buddy of mine who's been at this longer than I has a shop based there in St. Pete and notably was not at the track this weekend. And I reached out to him. And turns out he's gotten into the business of building autonomous buses. So he's got a deal. The state of Florida is paying for or helping to fund a they call them buses, but they only haul six people. It's a little pod. It's fully autonomous, and it will be fully autonomous when it hits the road in January. Only hauls six people. It's under 2,000 pounds, which gets it away from all sorts of laws. And it'll be like a ride hail. It's full electric. It'll be all over the streets of St. Pete next year. That you'll be able to get on an app on your phone and call it, and it takes you where you want to go, and that's it. And it is going to be instantly out of the box, what is it, level 4, level 5, no driver. They'll go 35 miles per hour. They're keeping them in the city for now, but it's going to be, you know, they're capable of 65. But at that kind of weight, to stay under 2,000, to get out of a lot of the laws, stay away from a lot of the laws, regulating this stuff, it's, you know, pretty lightweight piece, so I don't think you'd want to go much faster than 35 miles per hour in it.
Yeah.
So he's deal fell in his lap. A guy was looking for space to do this project. It was a friend of a friend, and he said, hey, just do it at my shop. I'm a little slow right now. It was back in last October, and in that business, you're slow in October usually. So they brought their own crew in and started working on it, and before you know it, he had his mechanics on the job, and they fired most of theirs because they were inept, and he has his race guys now working on doing this adaptation. The technology is all from France. I think there was one that I'd read about from over there. I forget what the name is, and I didn't get the actual name of the company they're using. And he's doing the adaptation to the vehicle itself. And they're also working on a few of them for Disney. So there are going to be some autonomous buses running around inside of Disney soon too.
You know, that to me seems like the way this is going to get built up. You know, people said, well, regulations and laws and all these things are going to get in the way. What most people just aren't realizing about this whole shift towards autonomous is that there is so much money in this, so many companies working on it, that things like this that we weren't even thinking about. Keep the vehicles under a certain weight and all of a sudden a whole bunch of regulations don't apply. Run them on private companies like Disney. It's not going to take them long to prove the technology. And I just think a lot of this stuff is going to happen a lot faster than we think.
What blew me away was this is a guy who doesn't give two shits about buses or hauling people or anything around. This guy's a serious racer. You know, he's done nothing but that. He's, you know, and he was completely blown away by it. And, you know, he's all in. He's like, I'm not even going to run any cars this year. He goes, I'm committed to these guys for the year. We're going to get this project done and, you know, get them on the road for next January 1 of 2019. And who knows what will happen after that. And, you know, he immediately started talking to me about, you know, they're going to be needing service centers in other cities. And their direct target is someone you love to hate is Uber. Like, they really, really want to – they're coming after Uber's market. So they're going to do it right. Immediately with autonomous rather than using people to figure out the routes and so forth. And, yeah, it seemed really interesting. I mean, it was – you know, and then again, this guy is someone that I had never expected to have a conversation about a truck or anything else ever with. You know, he's one of my
right.
racer buddies. And yeah. Here he is all in, like all in.
Yeah, so one of the
it's not going away.
Have...
And yeah, so
go ahead.
Not that I want to keep talking about it, but something smacks me in the head all the time. Every time I turn around, something hits me with this.
That's what I keep saying, and it's not that I want to keep talking about it, but you have to. We have to pay attention. One, it's not all negative either. There's going to be a ton of opportunities here. Our whole economy is changing so much. With all of the sharing, and honestly, in a lot of ways, a lot of these technologies are favoring small business. So it's not all bad news. But I didn't even have time to read this. I, you know, saw it in my email right before we came on the air. But one of the headlines was Waymo, Uber, Starsky, Embark, and Tesla, autonomous Class 8 come out of stealth mode. I mean, this stuff is hitting the streets.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. Like I said, that hit me hard this week. And I said, this is someone who you'd never, never, ever think would be into this.
Interesting. All right, let's get some phone calls. We've got some questions lined up. We're going to start off in Tennessee. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How you guys doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Good.
Bridget sent over an oil sample. I was just going to get you to look at it. I'm just wondering about the iron, see if I should worry about that, if it's too high or not.
No, you're right about where I would expect it to be. So let me look at that again. This text is really small.
It's like 44 parts.
Yeah, and you're at about 29,000 miles on the oil. That is a little high. A little higher than we'd like to see. We normally at 29,000, if we see the iron at about 29, that's a pretty normal progression. I, you know, being at 44 isn't awful. I mean, they don't flag it at all. They consider that a level zero. And I wouldn't get too worried about it.
Well, they did flag it. They did flag it, didn't they?
Not on mine.
Oh, well, it was green. I guess that's not considered flag.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, zero and one are completely normal.
Okay. All right. And what about, and see, I've talked to you about this truck, like this engine, like last year. What about the soot? Is that because They found some gasket or something that was misplaced on the charge air cooler system. I don't know if that's come down or what.
The soot on this one at 1.5 isn't ideal for a Series 60. It's a little high, not enough that I'd really spend a lot of time or money chasing it. But, you know, when a Series 60 is running right, that soot number will stay under 0.1.
Yeah. All right. Well, I appreciate it. I was just checking. I just had an overhead done on it after the guys at OPS called me and told me that I may have something tight on it or something rubbing against a valve or a camshaft or something. And they did find all the exhaust valves tight, and they corrected it. But it still hasn't come – that iron still hasn't come down that much.
Yeah, like I say, it's not horrible. It's – you know, I would just keep an eye on it. Watch how it progresses as you get more miles on the soil.
Let me ask you something. How many miles would you give it to get a true sample? Like after you, because see, I always wait till I get the oil down to where it needs to be added, and then I add fresh oil in, and then I change the filter. How many miles should I give it to get that good oil circulated around to give a proper reading on the oil?
You know, the way I like to take an oil sample is if at the end of a good day of running, and when you shut down for the day, don't turn the truck off. Just get out and take a hot sample. That's going to be your most accurate reading.
Okay, so just run all day after you've added the gallon or two of oil in, then, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. All righty. I appreciate you guys.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to North Dakota. Dan, welcome to the program.
Yeah, how you doing there, guys? We just got a simple question about biofuel. When you get
all right,
to
go
a,
ahead.
A pump, yeah, when you get to a pump and the handles are nice and clean, and you know that Iowa, for example, is always a high concentrate of biofuel, but you go down to a discount fuel center and all those handles and nozzles are blacker than the ace of spades. My question is, would a guy be leery of using those things in fear of picking up that algae?
Oh, boy. I'll throw my opinion out. I don't know if anybody else has any thoughts on this. We're coming up on a break, so we'll probably take this into the break. We'll come right back, and we'll get to this right around the corner. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com. If you don't have our app yet to listen to the show, you should get it. It's free. It's easy. It's a great way to listen to the show. You can listen live. You can listen to all of the shows after the fact. So once you have the app, you'll never have to worry about missing a show again. Go to the website, letstruck.com. Look at the top of any page, and you'll see the links for both Android and iPhone. Download it, start listening. We'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rothman. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. The guys from Pittsburgh Power are here helping out. We're talking with Dan in North Dakota about biofuel. You know, Dan, this is one of the topics that's kind of frustrated me for years. I've tried to find people that could really help me understand fuel and additives and all the different biofuels now. And part of the problem with biofuels, they're just not consistent. You know, petroleum is pretty much petroleum across the board. And, you know, other than just some different additive package, it's usually just the same stuff. Problem with biofuels is they're not consistent. They're made from different things. They're made using different processes. There's different concentrations. So it's really hard to pin down, you know, whether biofuel's any good or it's awful or the thing with algae, though, is I don't know that a handle being dirty or clean is really going to tell us much. Algae is going to grow when there's water. And if there's no water, you're just not going to get algae. But I don't know that, you know, how we know whose fuel supply has more or less water in it. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, like these nozzles would be jet black, not the handles.
Oh, the nozzle, okay. So
the nozzles
you're
are
thinking,
coated black.
Yeah. Again, I don't know what's causing that black. I kind of doubt that it's algae. Could be all kinds of things.
Well,
but,
like if,
you know,
if I go to a TA or Petro, I mean, those things are spotless. I go to the discount place and they're coated with all that black gook on it.
Now, when you say the nozzle, do you mean inside?
No, the outside of the nozzle, right where the tube and the spring and the, just and
oh,
the
yeah,
handle
okay.
is behind it, right?
Cool.
I
have a feeling that's just more they never get cleaned than anything else. I mean, you know, you get residue, fuel residue on the outside, and then dust clings to it. Pretty soon it looks black. I think the bigger places are probably just keeping those clean. They're, you know, somebody's going around and keeping them clean, and the small discount places are. But I don't think that I would assume that, you know, those have algae.
Okay, I was just kind of wondering, there's this one fuel stop that I go to, I've been looking at it, and I'm going, geez, you know, hope this isn't that algae stuff that you guys are always talking about. And then when I go to Tio or Petro, and those things are spotless, and I'm sitting there, and you just kind of, you know, taking a double take at it. And I just figured I'd just get an opinion.
Yeah, I would venture to say that it's nothing more than the fact that they never wipe down the outside of that nozzle, and that's just, you know, grime and dirt building up on the fuel that's on there. Bruce, did you have something?
Yeah, algae in a fuel tank looks like mucus, and the way you spot it, that you have it, it's waste. Is little black specks, and you'll see it in a fuel filter. If you take your fuel filter and dump it into a bucket, like a clean white bucket, and you see little black specks, that's the waste from algae. And it's hard to see in a tank, but if you'd had a clear tank and you could see like a mucus inside it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
algae's pretty
algae.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think, the outside of the nozzle itself being dirty is any real indication of algae. Let's go to Texas. Victor, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hello?
What's on your mind today?
Hello?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I got pulled over and got a roadside a little while back, and they wrote me up on an oil leak, my engine. Now, I just had this truck at T&E, and they put an OPS on for me, and I had them cut up my oil pan and put a gasket on it. So I take it up the road, and the first thing TA Petro wants to do is drop the pan and put a new gasket on it. Well, I need him to sign off on my sheet, so I let him do it, and here I go down the road, and I still got a leak. So I go to another Detroit shop, and they're like, you got the crank seal. So I put a crank seal in. I think I still got a leak. What do I need to do to get into this for power and get a good guy looking at my engine to, stop just throwing parts at it and not getting anything done? I need to start to run right.
Well, what year truck is it? What year engine?
It is a D-Deck Series, D-Deck 4, Series 60. It's a Schneider glider. Which I want to say the truck's an 11. I don't know what donor engine was in it.
Tell me about the breather tube. Nobody put over in that breather tube, did they?
I wouldn't know a breather tube without a manual, sir. I'm a driver and a business person. I don't have a mechanical background.
Breather tube comes off your valve cover and it has the blow-by comes out of the engine down the breather tube. And a lot of people put a rubber hose on it, like a piece of heater hose, to get it closer to the ground so that the blow-by doesn't gather under the truck. And what happens is the oil vapors attack the rubber. The rubber gets very soft. It looks normal when you're stopped and you're looking at it. But when you're going down the road, the air underneath the truck will blow the rubber hose parallel with the highway. And now you're not getting rid of your blow-by, and your blow-by is coming out of the gaskets and up the drain tube of the turbo. So the first thing you need to check before you spend any more money is the breather tube.
Okay.
And make sure that it's open.
That's what points down. You can see it on the right side, on the passenger side, when you're looking at the truck. It's got like,
yes.
So exhaust smoke coming out of it.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, and I just follow that up and make sure that it's solid and not.
Well, you want to start at the bottom and make sure there's no hose on it. And then the proper way to do it would be to take it off and to blow air through it and clean it out and make sure that something's not restricting it. And then where the blow-by comes into it, sometimes there could be a filter or a screen there. You want to make sure that's not clogged. That's the first thing you have to do.
Okay. How far scheduled out are you guys? I mean, what else do you get into Pittsburgh Power? Because I would love if you guys would evaluate this truck for me, tell me what I can do with it.
Usually we're booked about a week in advance. Now, if it's an electrical problem, a lot of times we can get you in with a day or two notice. But for mechanical issues, it's generally a week. John,
okay.
Is it a
I
week right now?
South
are we
Central.
Booked out a week?
We're about a week and a half. We're the rest of this week booked up and all of next week. So we're scheduling for a week from Monday. So we're about a week and a half out right now. I would look at on that truck, that particular engine, if it's never been done, rear structure leakage is common on those. Make sure that breather is nice and tight. But if they keep looking in the area of the oil pan and the rear main seal, I'm leaning toward that thing needing a rear structure resealed.
Does that translate to in terms of parts and labor?
It's about a 20-hour job. You have to take the transmission out. You have to crib the engine in the chassis. And then you have to pull the rear engine mounts off. And then the housing that surrounds the flywheel is what we refer to as the rear structure. And that thing doesn't have a gasket per se. They use an anaerobic sealant on it, and that lasts for about, I don't know, 10 years or so. And then it's a soft seal. And what happens is it hardens, and it doesn't flex with the engine anymore. So all the torque is transferred from the engine block through the flywheel housing / rear structure to the engine mounts. And eventually that stuff gives up, and you start leaking oil out from around there. Really common after, you know, like I said, about a 10-year-old engine, 10, 12-year-old engine. If it's never been done, that's most likely where it's coming from. But like Bruce said, take care of the small, easy solution first. But I'm leaning toward that.
Sounds like he needs to schedule and get it into you guys so you can take care of that, some other stuff for him. Let's keep moving. Let's head out to California. Robert, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I have a 14-liter Detroit. It's a 2009, and it runs real, real bad. I mean, it doesn't have any power. What can I do to maybe increase the power or to, that it runs better in hills? You know, just a dog.
All right, let's head into a break, and we will figure that one out right around the corner. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We'll be right back with more of the Power Hour. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We're down to the final segment. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. We were talking with Robert in California. So, guys, what can you do for his 14-liter?
Is that a DDEC 6 2009?
I'm not sure if it's a DDEC 6.
What year is it?
2009.
Oh, nine. It should be DDEC 6.
Sounds has like to be a 6.
Kind of,
yeah. Has six. To be a yep. 6.
Okay. Any thoughts?
What do you got for that, Ethan?
Well, yeah, I was just sitting there thinking there. We've done one in the past where we were able to get some more power out of it, but you know, we typically don't see the DDEC 6 too often. Something that I would like to put on the dyno, see where we're at, make sure we don't got anything wrong with it to start is doing its factory horsepower. And there is a tune to put on it.
Oh, you
but
do
I
have.
Don't remember what exactly it did.
We've had a couple of tunes for that.
Yeah, but I don't.
Got two of them we've had through.
Yeah, but I don't remember the exact numbers off the top of my head.
No, he's in California. Do you live in California? Do you run the I-5 corridor or do you come east?
I don't run California all that much. I have other trucks that can't go in there, so I try to stay out. But
where's home for you?
Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma, okay. Well, that's one that we would need the truck at the shop, and we don't want you to send us the ECM. So can you get a load for up towards the western Pennsylvania area?
I can get one and get up there. I haven't done that in the past.
Okay. That would be our best suggestion for you for the DDEC 6. It was a problem engine, so.
Well, you know, it's got just over 900,000 on it. Doesn't burn any oil. It's been a good truck. It just doesn't have the power that I'm getting used to. You know, I've got some other trucks that you guys have done the ECM upgrade on them, and boy, it's like no comparison.
Yeah.
But I sure would like to get that that other truck set up like these. I mean, that would be fantastic.
Were the other ones DDEC 4s?
Yeah, they're they're gliders, and yeah.
Okay. The DDEC 4 and DDEC 5 are not quite as complicated as the DDEC 6. And the DDEC 6 was the engine that took Detroit into having a DPF on it. So
right.
It'd be best to get it to the shop. And as you see, even though you're a fleet owner, once you have horsepower and torque, boy, when you don't have it, it makes driving a whole lot more work.
Yeah, it does. And my drivers have complained about that truck too. So.
not only that, when a truck doesn't run good, it kind of gets ignored because it doesn't make the person happy. You know.
There you go. We're heading off. We won't go there. We're heading off to Ohio. Stuart, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just bought a 95 T600. It's got a 12.7 Detroit in it. This is my first 12.7. I keep breaking AC compressor bracket bolts. About 1 a week, I'm running a grade 8 bolt nose. Any input on that?
Yeah, that's an easy fix. Call us up and order a torsional damper and a mercury-filled engine balancer, and your problems are solved.
That's it.
That's all it takes.
That'll do it.
A torsional damper on.
Is that a factory? Is that something Detroit had problems with? Or?
No.
Okay.
Are you a new listener to the show?
Oh, no. I listen quite a bit, but I've never heard that question answered before.
Oh, my. We talk about torsional dampers all the time, and I write about them frequently.
Yeah, I've ran them before. Hey. I had one 14 liter. I just never had heard the question asked about these bolts breaking, and I didn't know that would...
Head on over to our Facebook page. I recently posted a link to a video a fella did about them and put a link on there to an article on the subject just this morning. So it'll explain everything to you. But it's the vibrations and the pulses being transmitted through the block because the damper's not taking them up. So it'll be really obvious.
Here, I'll give
Bruce
a quick list of everything it breaks?
Yeah.
Okay, it's alternator brackets and bolts, air conditioning brackets and bolts, crankshafts, camshafts, accessory drive shafts, the springs in your clutch disc, the flywheel bolts, flywheel housing bolts, input shaft of the transmission. It's all those things that are affected by that torsional damper spinning on the front of that crank. And that's why it's imperative that you change them every half a million.
Bruce, I gotta tell you a story. Before I met you and before you taught me about the damper and all the problems it caused, one of the first new trucks that I bought in the mid-90s, an Aeromax with a Series 60 on it, awesome truck. I mean, I just had great luck with that truck, except I had one problem that started right around a half a million miles, and I kept breaking the bolts and the brackets on the alternator. And nobody knew what to do. We just kept beefing up the bolts and the brackets, and eventually they'd still break. And I look back on that now, and I think that's exactly what was going on.
That's what it was.
Yep. Now I know.
The stories continue. The N14 that came in our shop in a Freightliner, he had a 2-inch ratchet binder holding his air compressor onto the accessory drive cover, and I said, what in the hell is that? He said, well, it keeps breaking the bolts and the brackets. We put a new torsional damper on and fixed his bolts and brackets. The problem went away. I had another guy come in, and we put a light clutch in. He said, well, I hope these hold up better than the Eatons. I said, well, what kind of problem are you having with the Eatons? Every 140,000 miles, I knocked the springs right out of the clutch disc. And this guy was an ex-Clark forklift mechanic of 20 years. And I said, we took that damper off, we cut it in two, and it was locked solid. We put a new damper on. He called me back a week later, said, this truck's never been this smooth. Problem solved. Remember the guy the night he called us on the radio show, Kevin, and he had noises coming out of his flywheel housing? We sold him a new damper and balancer. The noises are gone.
Yeah.
And yet every time I walk through the shop and I look at trucks with 800,000 and 900,000 miles on, and I see original dampers.
Well, and what people don't realize is even after an in-frame, you're not going to get a new damper.
No, you do at our shop. But,
right, but that's pretty rare.
99% of the shops, they don't understand what the torsional damper does. And you'll hear the mechanics say, we never replace those things. They don't wear out. They don't know what's inside them.
Yeah.
It's like a shock absorber.
Yeah. It's amazing how many years we've been talking now, and yet it's still probably one of the most under-maintained parts on a truck.
The moment something breaks off the engine, or the shifter starts to rattle, or the door locks start to rattle, change the torsional damper. Give us a call. Put ours on. It's made in the USA. If you buy an OEM one, they're made in China and or India. Mack is the only company that stayed with the USA manufacturer, us and Mack. All the OEMs went overseas.
Bruce, you know what we need to do? We need to, I'll do most of the work if we could get some videos from you and some other stuff. We need to put together one of the online courses and just give it away free just on that one issue alone. You know, and it wouldn't have to be long, but I think if people see a visual and then we get it out there, I think that will really help us spread the word about that. So why don't we get together and put something like that together?
We'll get started right after the Louisville show.
That sounds like a plan. We're getting
a question about the
go ahead.
Louisville show. Next Tuesday, I'll be flying to Louisville, so I won't be able to do the show with you.
Ah, okay. Well, I'll be, I might even head to Louisville tomorrow. I've got a speaking engagement here in Minneapolis, and I'm already tired of the snow. So I think I'm going to take off as soon as I'm done tomorrow and head south. It's a little too cold here for me. We've got to wrap it up. That is the end of the show. We will see you next time. This was the Power Hour. Thanks to the guys from Pittsburgh Power. If you have anything else you need, give them a call. We'll see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody. Thanks. For some reason, we just kept dropping a lot of the calls that had questions, and we just don't have enough to get through another hour. So we're going to wrap this up, and we will see you next time. Thanks, everyone.